group has asked Ron to come up and be the main speaker for tonight.
Don't get excited. You might not want to hear what I got to say. I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February the 5th, 1981. And I want to thank Darian for asking me to come and speak. And there's a couple of guys that come around here. One of them is Lloyd, another one is Stanley, and another one is Blair. I don't know if they're here tonight, but 20 years ago when I came to the young people's group in Tampa, them guys hung out together. I used to call them the Three Musketeers. They're good guys. In fact, I was here a couple of weeks ago, and Stanley cut out his 20-year chip. And Blair texted me, he got a 19-year chip just recently. So I'm glad to hear that they're still going good. Okay, where do I want to start? When I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, and lived with my grandfather and my grandmother in Rhode Island, and my mother and father. Now, I got to tell you that my mom lived to be 97 years old, and she never believed that I was an alcoholic. She said the only reason why I drank was because of my grandfather. Now, and I got to tell you why she said that. When I was a toddler, and I don't remember this, it's just the stories that came from my father and mother. On a Saturday morning when my grandpa wasn't working, and I was 2, 3, 4 years old, I used to get out in the morning on Saturdays and have breakfast with him. And we had eggs and we had beans, and he put mustard on his beans. And I had the same thing as grandpa. After breakfast, he pulled a bottle of whiskey out of the cabinet, poured himself a shot, and then he poured a little bit in a spoon and he gave it to me, called a cough syrup. Then he would take me down, we would go and buy the Saturday morning paper, and then he would take me to the bar where he booked his numbers, and they would sit me on the bar, and the guys would give me Coca-Cola and chips and pretzels and all the stuff, and I got a lot of attention. And back in them days, the 1940s, Coca-Cola had cocaine in it. That's right. The federal government made them take it out. But that's how Coca-Cola got its name, by the way. Anyhow, because of that, my mother said, that's the reason why I like bottles, and that's because of my grandfather. But I'll tell you, I love bottles, and I found nothing but trouble in them, but I still love them. I couldn't wait to get to a bar after work, or when I wasn't working, that's where I was, in the bar. I started drinking when I was 15 years old, sneaking a beer once in a while. And by the time I was 18 years old, I had a fake ID and I was in a bar every day. President Kennedy got shot in 1963 in November. I was drafted in February of 1964. I got out of the Army in January of 1971. I gave him almost 8 years. I went from a private to Staff Sergeant E6, and I don't know how that happened. However, I did have a couple of Article 15s. I got in trouble because of booze. This guy that came up here, the gentleman read How It Works. Did you all hear that? Do you know what it says? It says, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. No one among us is going to do them perfectly. Nobody. And thank God they put that in there, because I'm a human being and I don't do them perfectly. And I've been around a long time. I just do the best I can. All right, anyway, off in the Army I went. My first arrest was in El Paso, Texas. I fell asleep on the bus stop bench waiting for the damn bus to go back to the base. And the cops came and woke me up, and I thought they would take me to the base, but they didn't. They took me to the Mexican border where the MPs were. They put me in the cage. They had to call Fort Bliss. Fort Bliss had to send some guy down to pick me up. They brought me back to the MP station up there, locked me up there, and then they had to call some guy on duty for my outfit to come and get me, and bring it back to my house. It would turn out to be a big fiasco. I had to go to court the next day, but the judge just gave it a slap on the wrist and said he didn't want to see my face in front of him again, and I didn't want to see his either. Anyways, I was there for quite a while. I went to Germany. While I was in Germany, I was going to these festivals. I started to learn some the German language. I found a German soldier that spoke British accent English, and he was teaching me how to speak some words. I knew enough to get in trouble. I could go downtown with 50 cents in my pocket and try to speak German to them guys, and they kept feeding me beer, kept feeding me. I could come back with a buck and a half, and I'd be drunk. I love Germany, I'll tell you, I had a great time. My first wife number one, she met me at one of these festivals that they have in small towns. She wanted me to meet her mom and her dad, so she took me home. And her mother had a little variety store, so it's not the variety store, so, you know. And her, you walk out of the variety store, the side door, and you walk down into a bar, and her father was running the bar. And I thought, all right, I'm not going to let her shine. Anyways, I married her. Her father was a hoot. He was a prisoner of war in the Second World War in Germany. He was crazy, and he got drunk, and I got drunk. We got drunk together, and sometimes my wife, number one, didn't even want me to go to her mother's and father's. She wanted me to stay out of it. Anyhow, I brought her back to the United States. 2 years later, I went to Vietnam. I got there in January 1968. January 1st, actually, I landed there, New Year's Day. I left there, thank God, December 21st, 1968. All I'll say about it was a scary time. And I didn't think I had a higher power, but now that I'm sober, I think about what happened and where I was and what was going on. I know my higher power was working overtime because I'm here. I came back to Fort Lee, Virginia. My wife, we were kids. I married her, she was 20. She was 18, I was 22. And when I came back, I was all screwed up, and she never knew what kind of shape I was going to be in when I got here, when I got home, if I was coming home, when I came home. And she couldn't take it, and she left, and she went back to Germany, and we got divorced. And I can't blame her, that was all me, my doing. So I'm at Fort Lee, and they have a beautiful NCO club there with a country and western band, music, and I used to hang out there when I wasn't on duty, and in walked wife number two. And we dated for a while, and I was in the States for about 18 months, and I had to go back to Vietnam. I didn't want to go, and I had orders to go back. And I was going back to that same damn outfit that I was in earlier, the first time I was there. And I couldn't go. There was a lot of people going to Canada, but I couldn't do that because I'd already been once, so they would say I was a deserter. So I had to go. I didn't want to go to Leavenworth, and that's where I ended up. So anyways, I went, and I was there about 4 months, and before I went, this woman I was dating, when my wife, number two, she said, let's get married before you go. And this was 1970, and I said, yeah, it sounded like a good idea at the time, why not? So we got married, and of course I didn't want her to have any trouble with the car while I was gone, so I bought a brand new Ford, 74 that year, and I went. Well, I'm there 4 months, and I call her up from San Francisco. My father was dying of cancer, and Red Cross came and asked me if I wanted to go home. Damn right I wanted to go home. Get me out of here. Anyway, I call her up from San Francisco, and she said, where the hell are you? I said, I'm in San Francisco. I said, pick me up at Dulles International in D.C. We're going to go to Massachusetts. And she said, yeah, okay. So she did, and we went to Massachusetts, and she didn't like the cold weather, and she didn't like me. She put everything she could in that Ford and left. And she took all the damn money I had at that time. I was really upset about that. I survived. Anyways, wow. Now she's gone. I got stationed at, they changed my assignment to Fort Devens to be near my dad. I was getting ready to get out of the Army. And my dad had passed, and they wanted to send me to Alaska. I just got out of Vietnam, they want to send me to Alaska. I said, no, you send me to a warm climate, I'll stay, but I'm not going there. I had 70 days left on that enlistment. And so they didn't send me. I signed in the tent not to re-enlist, and I got out. I started driving a truck. And I'm single, and I'm not seeing anybody, and I go into this club in Ayer, Mass. After I got out of the Army, I should say, at that time, they had this, they had a whole, it was Route 2A, it was called Strip. They had a few clubs there. One of them was a country and western place, and I used to go there all the time. And I met a girl by the name of Lillian there. She was with her girlfriend. And I dated Lillian about three or four times. God, she was a good lover. Oh. I mean, we could make music, let me tell you. But I found out she was married. And so I said to her, look, look, I can't see you. I don't want to get shot. So I stopped seeing her. And before I started driving the truck, I was doing anything I could to make a buck. I was tending bar at the VFW because I was a member there. And I was driving a school bus part-time. I was doing anything I could to make a dollar. And just before Thanksgiving that year, 71, wife number three walked in. And she was with her brother-in-law and her sister. And I started dating her. And I had to get out of that apartment that I was living in because I couldn't afford it anymore. Now that my wife was gone. And I was out of the Army. I wasn't making as much money as I could. Believe it or not, I was making more money in the Army than I was when I first got out. So, this girl that I started dating, she said, her name was Judy, she said, why don't you just move in with me? And she had a nice home, and she lived there with her three kids and her mother. And I said, oh, that's your mom. She's really like that. Don't worry about it. She's all right. So I moved in. It was a beautiful place. I'm saved. So I lived there for about 15 months. We decided we'd get married. And we get married in 1973. Well, it was July 4th of 1973-4. I can't remember now exactly, but we hadn't been married very long. Must have been 73. And it was a picnic at the VFW, and my wife and I were helping out at the picnic. We're doing stuff in Upwalk, Lillian. And she said to me, Ron, can you give me a ride home? I'm stuck for a ride. And my wife, standing right there, she goes, you know her? And I said, well, yeah, I dated her a few times before I met you. She said, well, if you want to give her a ride, go ahead. I said, well, I'll be right back. So Lillian gets in the car, we're going down the road. She informs me she's now divorced. And she wants me, and I can't say no. And I love my third wife. Honest to God. Now, Lillian was really something to look at. She had long, dark black hair. She had she was about 5 foot five. She weighed about 120 pounds. She was put together nicely. She had beautiful eyes. I mean, God. She was really, and so she had three kids, and on the weekend, her husband, her ex-husband would come and take the kids, and we'd be alone, so we would go out clubbing. She can't drink. And so she would go to the ladies' room and stagger a little bit sometimes, and the guys would look at her, and they would see that, and on their way back, they would be hitting on her. And I ended up with a damn fist fight with somebody, or two or three. It was crazy. For 2 years. Honest to God, I loved this girl. But she wouldn't quit drinking, and I wanted to drink. And I just couldn't deal with it no more. And I finally told her, Lillian, I'm leaving. And I did. And I left, and I went and rented a room in the next town over. And I was driving a truck by this time, and I started driving. I was local, I was home every night. And I was off on the weekends, and I don't know, 3 or 4 months went by, and it's a Saturday night, I'm drinking, and I'm getting a little horny, so I think I'll go visit Lillian. Why not? So I go to her house, it's about 10 o'clock at night, no lights, no cars in the driveway, the kids are gone, and I knock on the door, nobody answers, so I think, I never gave her my key back, only she changed the locks. I tried the key, it works. So I go in, I walk around the house, I look around, I go into the bedroom, I'm drunk. I'm tired, I'm, you know, sleepy. I get undressed and go to bed. I used to live there, so I'm comfortable. Well, 2 o'clock in the morning, some guy shaking the hell out of me. Who the F are you? I don't know what to say. I'm trying to get my head together. I was just being woke up from being passed out. And I don't know if I said anything or not, but the guy turned around and he says to her, "You deal with this, I'm not gonna." He walks out of the house, gets in his car and drives off. She was standing in the doorway watching all this. So she went over, she locked the front door, she comes back, she gets undressed and gets in bed. I raise my right hand to God. This is crazy stuff I do when I'm drunk. Anyways, the next day I gave her key back, and I said, "You know, somebody's going to get hurt. We can't do this." And I did. I just left. And I never saw her again. But I did talk to her on the phone a few times. I don't even know if she's alive today. God bless her, wherever she is. And I got to tell you, I haven't been married since I left the third wife. I'm still single. I'm 84 years old. I live alone. And I'm very comfortable. Oh my God, I have so many friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in 1981 finally, and I got sober at the Monday night speakers meeting in Fayetteville, Massachusetts. I drove truck all over the country. I got a job driving over the road. I drove all over the country. And I gotta tell you about the good things that happen to you when you're sober. I bought a house. I was living with a guy that I used to work with. He owned a cottage next door to his house. He sold it to me for $5,000 in 1980. I was trying to get sober. My first AA meeting was in 77. I didn't get sober until 81. Anyways, I bought this house. And I go, okay. Because, you know, I couldn't keep a relationship. The way I drank, you know, if it lasted a month, I was doing good. They'd throw me out. So now I got my own roof, nobody's going to throw me out, I'm all set. Well, 3 days later, the police department show up, the Fayetteville Police Department, the house is condemned, I can't live anymore. I could have killed this guy. All my money's gone. But I own this house, it's the property that it's on. And so I go to a Monday night speakers meeting in Fayetteville. And there's a little lady there that's been around since Jesus Christ was a pope. And she says to me, her name was Eileen, she was nice to her. She said, "Ron, what's the matter?" And I told her, I said, "Jesus, I bought this house, it's condemned. I can't live in it. I don't know what I'm going to do." So she said, "Well, just get a lawyer and go down to town hall, find out what's wrong, fix it." I didn't know you had to do that. I didn't know you could do that. I thought they were going to have to knock it down and rebuild it, whatever. So I did that, and I go to the bank, and they gave me a ton of money, and I bought it. I mean, I fixed it. I fixed it up the way I wanted it, and I lived in that house 21 years, really happy. I had some long-term relationships. Women that I met in AA. I gotta tell you, if you're here looking for a relationship, the odds are good. You'll get one. Just remember this, the goods are on. Liar. Anyways, I retired at the age of 60. I come to Florida, and I belong to the Monday Night Speakers Meeting and the Back Porch. I'm a little sick, I need two boots. The Back Porch is an everyday thing. At noontime, I go there every day, and there's a girl from, I, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I never had any kids, I'm just not in life and stuff. And this girl's coming, and she's pregnant, and she's going to have a baby. And she has the baby, and 2 or 3 months after she has the baby, she brings the baby to the meeting in a stroller, and all the women are all over the table, you know. And there's a table at the Back Porch, and she's sitting at the end seat in the strollers on the end of the table. I happen to be sitting just to her right. And the meeting's going to start, and this little baby starts to fuss. She picks this kid up and says, "Here, Ron, hold her while I fix the stroller. I'm having a heart attack. I got this little thing in my hands," and she opened her eyes and smiled at me, and I fell in love. I did. Now, her father was not in the picture. So her mom wasn't working for a little while, and she got to be over 2 years old when her mom went to work, and so Ron was the guy to take care of her. I was retired. So every morning I would go to the house, I would pick her up. She'd climb. She was so cute. She'd climb in my car and she'd say, "Mommy said no ice cream before noon, Ron." Okay. So anything that happened at school, I used to take her to school, bring home. Once you went to kindergarten, you have to go meet the teacher. Ron had to go meet the teacher, so I did. So we went at the teacher's thing and talking, and finally it's about 11:30 in the morning, and I told her, "Hi, I'm gonna go, and I'll pick you up after school." She comes and gives me a big hug and a kiss, and she says to the teacher, "Ron's going to a meeting." I used to take her every day at noontime to the Back Porch. And she would sit at the table and come down and color in a book and cream. She was a good kid. And we had fun. I mean, she did some things to me, but I looked back at it, and I never had any kids, and I smiled. You know, that girl graduated from high school last year. She's her birthday's the 22nd of February. She's going to be 19 years old. This past Thanksgiving, I was invited down, and I had Thanksgiving dinner with their family. And she's been in my life ever since. Every year before school, I went and bought all the supplies, the color, the crayons, stuff, papers, the pens and pencils, and all the stuff the kids have to have. I did that every year. I did. She moved to Boynton Beach, and she's in high school. And her mother says, "Come on, baby, we're going to go get some school supplies." She says, "Not until Ron comes." And I came, and I did that every year while she was in high school. And I told her the last year of high school, I said, "When you go to college, kid, you're on your own. I'm not going to do this." But she just called me up. I sent her a birthday card or something, and she just called me up yesterday and said, "Ron, I love you. Thank you so much for the card, blah, blah, blah." And she talks to me, and then her mom gets on the phone. And so I have a grandchild. I never thought I'd have any kids at all. I met the Monday Night Speakers about almost 7 years ago. And there's this little girl here, she's about 4'11". She weighs about 100 pounds soaking wet. And she said, I used to go hang around with an older guy, Bob. And she's come over, she said, "Can I sit with you and Bob?" She felt safe. "No, I'm not going to hit on old guys." And so she did, and we got to be friends. And God bless her. She was like my adopted daughter. Before she's married now, and she's happy, and I'm glad for her. She's happy, she's not a nice guy. He's not in AA. And she's living with him in his house, and they're very happy together. But she still visits me. She used to come and visit me all the time. Before she was married, she'd come to my house. She rented a room. One time she was renting a room, and her insurance went up because she had a couple of accidents, so she couldn't afford to pay the rent and keep her insurance at the same time. So she said, "Well, do you think you could find a little job for me so I can make a little extra money to pay my insurance?" I said, "Well, you come once a week for 4 hours, we'll go to the grocery store, you can help me with that, there's stuff around the house, or whatever." So, I paid her, she'd come. I did that about 6 or 7 months, and I finally went over to the insurance company. I said, "How much is she owed for the rest of the year?" And I paid it, and then I told her, I said, "You don't have to come anymore." I paid the insurance money. So she still came. She used to bring a book, Dr. Bob, my good old timer. That's a great book, by the way. And she'd read a few pages, and I would read a few pages. And then we'd watch TV, and she'd eat my ice cream. She had a tough job, I'll tell you. But even today, now, she's working, she's got a job at Publix. She works in a deli. She'll call me up in the morning, she's not working. Hey, her hours are screwed. Some days she goes to work at 6 in the morning, and gets out at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. The next day she goes to work at 11:30 or 12:30 at noon, and she gets out at 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And so in some days that she has off or she's not working in the morning, she'll call me up and she'll say, "Ron, what are you doing?" I'll say, "Nothing. We're going out for breakfast." "Okay." So we go out for breakfast, we spend some time together. You know, and it's a great relationship. You know, she's 50 years old, she's like she could be my daughter. I'm 84 years old, she could be my daughter. It's a great relationship. If any of you guys ever had a girl that's a friend, and I mean just a friend, if you never had one, you're missing out on something. Women can be really good friends. Just friends. No benefits on the side. I'm serious about that. So I said, I want to tell you about the good things that happened. So now I got a granddaughter and a daughter. And so, that house that was condemned that I had to spend money on, I had a $20,000 mortgage on it. I used to bitch every month paying that mortgage. And for a while I got in a taxi limousine business, and I got kept laid off in a truck. He said, "The Teamsters Union, if you're the last man hired, you're the first man laid off if things are slow." So I got tired of that, and I thought I'd start my own taxi service, and it grew into be a taxi limousine company. And it worked out well for about 3 or 4 years. And I was making so much money with the limousines, I let the taxis go. And I should have kept them because they would stay. And then all of a sudden, nobody wanted the limousine anymore. Here I am with 3 limos, sitting around doing nothing. I had a heart attack. I threw up my hand. I said, "God, I don't care anything about the money. I just want to live." And he was out of work for a couple of months. And I got a job driving all over the country after that. Some guy called me up and said, "You used to drive a truck?" I said, "Yeah, you want the job?" And I did. So I started driving all over the country anyway. That house, I sold it when I retired to come to Florida. And I sold it for $175,000. That was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. The fact that I have a little granddaughter and a daughter today, I'm very happy. All kind of things. I'm sitting, I'm at an AA meeting, and I'm looking to. I'm sitting, I want to get out of here on time, I don't know about the rest of you, but. Anyway, I'm sitting at an AA meeting at the bank, Post Lunch Punch, and this guy that I knew, he was in Vietnam also, and he said to me, "Ron, you go to the VA?" I said, "No, I got outside insurance." So he says, "You ought to go. You know, you deserve it. You should get down there." So I went down there, and they assigned me a primary care physician right away, and I got 10% disability. I said, "Wow, yeah, I'm glad I came, you know." So they wanted to know all about my medical history, and they found out that I had a heart attack when I was 49 years old. I was 49. or send your soul while I have that heart attack. And they said, no, can you get the paperwork from the hospital? I said, yeah, sure. So I did, and I gave it to them. And then I had about 5 different interviews with people wanting to know where I was in Vietnam, and how long I was there, and what time I was there. And I had a point out on the map where I was. And they said they used Agent Orange extensively in that area. And so that's what caused my heart attack, they said, Agent Orange. And I was with the VA for a while after that. And about 8 months went by, and all of a sudden, I get a letter in the mail. I got 100% disability, and I got a whole bunch of money from back since I submitted the paperwork. 8 months and 9 months, they gave it all to me at once. And I called up, I tell you, I said, Terry, I can't believe this. I just got this letter, so I got 100% disability. I got a bunch of money in my bank. He said, you go look in the bank. I said, no, he's no one. So I got my computer, sure enough, who it was. He just deposited it into my account. And now I collect a nice check every month. And a Social Security check and a small Teamsters pension check. Well, life is pretty damn good. Nice things happen to you if you stay here. You know, I went out. You know what happens when you go out? You change your sobriety date, that's all. You don't forget what you learned here when you were here. As a matter of fact, you're out there using a drinker and you wish you could forget what you learned. You know, it'll drive you crazy. This is the last house on the block. You're going to end up back here or dead or in an institution. So you might as well just stay. I did it twice. I went to a detox for the first time to save a relationship and a job. I saved the job and I lost the relationship. I got in trouble all over again. I almost lost the job. I'm back in a rehab. I got out of that rehab, and I'm not going to join a group or get a response. I'm going to sit. I'm going to listen. I'm not going to drink. Well, on 4th of July, I got a march at the parade with the VFW, and a guy comes out, we're all standing around outside getting ready to form up, and a guy comes out, this huge tray full of booze, he sits on the picnic table, 3 drinks for the guy's marching. I don't know, they picked up a drink, I didn't even think about it. I got it about halfway down, I thought, oh, Christ, I'm not supposed to do this. Oh, well, it's too late now. That quick. You know, you pour alcohol on me and you get instant asshole. It's like mashed potatoes. You know, you pour water and get instant mashed potatoes. I become an asshole. I do stupid things. Before I got sober, I'm dating a girl by the name of Joyce. We have a fight. She's going to go home to her mother's house. She does. Her mother lives in the next town over. She lives on the second floor apartment. I was a 210 house. So I get stubborn when I'm drinking. I get up in the morning and I'm hungover and I have a couple of beers and I'm going to go talk to Joyce. So I go over to mother's house and I knock on the door. My mother says, who is it? I said, Ron, I want to talk to Joyce. Joyce, I want to talk to you. I said, I don't care, I want to talk to her. She's not going to talk to you, Ron. You better leave or I'm going to call the police. I don't care, call the damn police. I want to talk to Joyce. So she called cops. The police come. They come upstairs, I hear them come up the steps, toward me. Downstairs, well, they're nice to me, and I'm nice, I'm not being belligerent. Ron, well, get in your car, go away, come back tomorrow, things will be better, you'll be able to talk tomorrow. So I get in my car, and I drive off. 2 hours later, I drive around that neighborhood, I'm see the police car, I go back there, bang, bang, bang on the door. It's Ron, I want to talk to Joyce. Joyce is not going to talk to you, Ron. Go away. I want to call the police. Call the damn cops. I don't care. When they were there, they said if they had to come back, they're going to jail. So, I hear the downstairs door open. I hear the footsteps coming up the steps. I'm standing there like this. They put the cuffs on and took me to jail. Honest to God, I have been locked up so many times. You know something, in the last 45 years that I've been sober, I haven't been locked up once. Isn't that funny? I haven't even had a fist fight. in 45 years, I don't even want one. Them days are gone. And I feel so good today. I'm so relaxed. Alcoholics Anonymous will give you a great life if you stay. It's not hard. You don't have to do the things perfectly. You do the best you can. You get with your sponsor and you do it right away. And you get it done and you feel good about yourself. You feel like a weight's been lifted off of your shoulders. You'll feel good. Okay? And if you're here and you have less than 90 days, cut 90 days to a meeting, and I guarantee you, you right now where your life is today, and I guarantee you at the end of that 90 days your life will be better. I guarantee it. And if you stay a year, boy, I remember when I got my first year, oh, my sponsor. Alan. My first sponsor's name was Alan Ashley. He had 15 years of sobriety, I had 90 days. He agreed to be my sponsor. He was crazy. He thought that this was his fellowship because his initials were AA. I used to get so frustrated with that guy. I could punch him sometimes. And I would say, Al, I got to talk to you about this. I got to talk to you about it. It's okay. Meet me at the Newport Creamery. I'd go there. He'd have a cup of coffee sitting on the counter waiting for me. I'd go there and I'd sit down. He'd say, Ron, you know what my wife did today? She did this to me and that to me and blah, blah, blah. I forget all about what I was going to talk to him about. I would be so mad. I'd say, God, you know, you did it again. And you know something? It's funny. There's a woman by the name of Hope, and she just celebrated 58 years of sobriety. I heard her speak, and she said she has a God box, and she puts the trouble in the God box and gives it to God. Now, when I heard that, I got myself a little God box, and I wrote down one thing in it. I said, dear God, and this was before I got all this money from the government. I said, dear God, please help me with my finances. I don't want to hit the lottery. I didn't ask for that. I'm not sure me, but I just want to help with my finances. I put it in a box, I put all about it. And damn if I didn't get that 100%. I couldn't believe it. Now I put everything in that damn box. Yeah, it goes, you know, something you think about it. What was bothering you a month ago? I bet it's gone. You can't even remember what it was. Leave it to God to handle it. Sandy Beach used to say, Tell God you're going to a movie to take care of your problems while you're at the movie. When you come out, don't take them back. Take off. And I believe that. You know something, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate your attention. And I thought half of you would be already gone by now. Anyway, thank you very much for letting me come and speak.
Thank you, Ron.